1, chapter 13, text 17. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Evam Griheshu Shaktanam Pramatanam Tarihaya. Atyakramara Vigata Kala Paramadustara. Insurmountable eternal time imperceptibly overcomes those who are too much attached to family affairs and are always engrossed in their thought. Purport. Quote, I am now happy. I have everything in order. My bank balance is quite enough. I can now give my children enough estate. I am now successful. The poor beggar sannyasis depend on God, but they come to beg for me. Therefore, I am more than the Supreme God. These are some of the thoughts which engross the insanely attached householder who is blind to the passing of eternal time. Our duration of life is measured, and no one is able to enhance it, even by a second, against the scheduled time ordained by the Supreme Will. Such valuable time, especially for the human being, should be cautiously spent, because even a second passed away imperceptibly cannot be replaced, even in exchange for thousands of golden coins amassed by hard labor. Every second of human life is meant for making an ultimate solution to the problems of life, that is, repetition of birth and death, and revolving in the cycle of 8,400,000 different species of life. The material body, which is subject to birth and death, diseases and old age, is the cause of all sufferings of the living being. Otherwise, the living being is eternal. He is never born, nor does he ever die. Foolish persons forget this problem. They do not know at all how to solve the problems of life, but become engrossed in temporary family affairs, not knowing that eternal time is passing away imperceptibly and that their measured duration of life is diminishing every second without any solution to the big problem, namely repetition of birth and death, disease and old age. This is called illusion. But such illusion cannot work on one who is awake in the devotional service of the Lord. Yudhisthira Maharaj and his brothers, the Pandavas, were all engaged in the service of Lord Sri Krishna, and they had very little attraction for the illusory happiness of this material world. As we have discussed previously, Maharaj Yudhisthira was fixed in the service of Lord Mukunda, the Lord who can award salvation, and therefore he had no attraction even for such comforts of life as are available in the kingdom of heaven, because even the happiness obtained on the planet Brahmalok is also temporary and illusory. Because the living being is eternal, he can be happy only in the eternal abode of the kingdom of God, Paravyoma, from which no one returns to this region of repeated birth and death, disease and old age. Therefore, any comfort of life or any material happiness which does not warrant an eternal life is but an illusion for the living, eternal living being. One who understands this factually is learned, and such a learned person can sacrifice any amount of material happiness to achieve the desired goal known as Brahma Sukhyam, or absolute happiness. Real transcendentalists are hungry for this happiness, and as a hungry man cannot be happy by all comforts of life minus foodstuff, so the man hungry for eternal absolute happiness cannot be satisfied by any amount of material happiness. Therefore, the instruction described in this verse cannot be applied to Maharaj Yudhisthira's brothers and mother. It was meant for persons like Dhritarashtra, for whom Vidura came especially to impart lessons. Om Gyanatimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhu vayebhya patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So before discussing this verse, I'd like to put it back in context. The first canto, at least from the fourth chapter, is discussing the history of the Bhagavatam, which is the history of its speakers and hearers. I've discussed this many times. The sages of Namashranya asked Suta Goswami to describe Vyasadeva, how he got his inspiration, to explain a little bit about Sukadeva Goswami. They were intrigued. Unmata Jada Mukhavat. Mukhavat means like he was foolish. Jada means retarded. And Pramata means like this, mad, insane. He was wandering like that, yet he was put on the Vyasasana among all the sages. So they had all these interesting intrigues, because they had heard something about the Bhagavatam. And then they wanted to hear about Maharaj Prickett. And they asked several questions about him, but they basically centered around his extraordinary birth, his extraordinary life, his extraordinary death. So in the seventh chapter, Suta Goswami began to explain about his extraordinary birth, not just his extraordinary birth, but his extraordinary pre-birth. His history began in the womb, because in the womb, Krishna came to protect him from the Brahmastra weapon thrown by the son of Drona, Ashvatthama. And therefore he saw Krishna in the womb. It was described in the previous verse when the Brahmins were telling about his life by the science of astrology and what he would do, or however they predict the future. And they also told a little bit about they described it, you know, what happened. And they said that that's how he got the name Parikshit. Parikshit means examiner. He saw the form of Krishna in the womb. His whole life was in the consciousness of seeing that form again. So they discussed that story. And while discussing that story, which brings us to the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra, there's just so many incredible historical, spiritual events that happen that Suta Goswami has to describe them. It's almost like he tells the history of what happened when Maharaj Prickett was in the womb until his birth. From that period of time, when he was in the womb of Uttara, till his birth, which is the last chapter, 12. So between chapters 7 and 12, he tells the history of what happened when that child was in the womb. And he starts to describe it, and it's an incredible part of the Bhagavatam, because it introduces us to the essence of the Bhagavatam, which is Krishna's relationship with his devotees. How he has a relationship means reciprocates. That's what relationship means. How Krishna is not just the creator, but he's the supreme person. And person means reciprocating love in relationships. And that's what Krishna does better than any other person. Therefore, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, He's described as Akila Rasam Rita Murti. He's the full embodiment of exchanging love. And that's why we love Krishna, not just because he has a position, not just because he's the judge or the king. This means like when you kind of kowtow to someone. Not just like that, but because he's so wonderful. So it shows how he exchanges with his devotees. And in fact, the very first time that we see Krishna is very significant. He's on a chariot. And the first time we see him in our two most important scriptures, which is the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, both times he's on the chariot. And what this indicates is his supreme personality, because it shows that he has so much love for his devotees that he's even in a position of the devotee's servant. It actually shows, even though he's in the position of a driver, which is not a very high position, especially in India. He's the driver, but he's the supreme person. He's even serving his devotees. And then we follow the history. We just follow Krishna. Sita Goswami just describes Krishna. He leaves, and then when he leaves, Kunti comes and offers her prayers, which express the essence of bhakti. Then he leaves again, Yudhisthira comes, expresses his despondency. Krishna covers Yudhisthira in a way that Yudhisthira cannot be enlightened by Krishna's own personal instructions, nor Vyasadeva's, simply because he wants to glorify Bhishma on the battle of Kurukshetra, laying on the bed of arrows, and he wants him to speak philosophy in front of all the other great sages to show the glories of his devotees. And then Krishna tries to leave again. About four or five times he tries to leave. And then the residents of Hastinapur, we see their sentiments. The ladies go up on the roof and they begin to watch Krishna and they begin to cry. But they hold back their tears because they have so much love for Krishna, even though they've never met him. But how did they get that love for Krishna? They got that love for Krishna because when they were in Hastinapur and Kurukshetra, news would come from Kurukshetra about Krishna on the battlefield, speaking the Bhagavad Gita, and then, Krishna, yes, that boy that lived in Vrindavan. And they just heard about Krishna and developed such spontaneous love. So when they were crying and they said, Krishna's leaving, this is inauspicious. When someone leaves, don't argue with them. Don't create, it's very inauspicious. So they check their tears and then Krishna comes into Dwarka. And we see the relationship between the devotees there. And we get introduced to the sentiments of love, the Vyoga, the different moods of separation of people who saw Krishna and then are seeing him again, that union. And the love of the queens of Dwarka. And then when Krishna enters Dwarka, then Sita Goswami begins to describe now Marge. Now, all of a sudden, Marge Prickett's about to be born, and he begins to describe that. And the last chapter was the birth of Marge Prickett. So now Sita Goswami wants to get into discussing. He wants to get into discussing his activities. But to discuss Maharaj Prickett's activities, he has to be enthroned. To be enthroned, Yudhisthira has to renounce the kingdom. So therefore, he begins to discuss Vidura, which again doesn't seem like it's connected to the story of Maharaj Prickett. But it is connected to the story of Maharaj Prickett because it's Vidura's preaching to Dhritarashtra, which serves as the impetus for Dhritarashtra to leave his home, and that shocked Maharaj Yudhisthira. who also was hearing Vidura's instructions, which also inspired him to also renounce and then to then Maharaja Pricket was enthroned. And then you can, so Sridhar Swami says, without hearing this story of Vidura in relationship to Dhritarashtra, then we don't get to hear about Maharaja Pricket. But you have to understand another thing is that the Bhagavatam has two stories. One is the story of the activities that happen, which are sometimes hard to follow because it's, you know, Sukadeva Goswami speaking, and then he speaks about, you know, Maitreya, who speaks about Lord Brahma, who, there's a storyline, which really is basically at, the storyline is basically at Naimisharanya, and then they're talking about different things, and then there's storylines. But there's another storyline of the knowledge that you need to have to become perfect and self-realized, and ultimately, be able to understand Krishna in truth. So whatever, that's also connected, and my godbrother Bhurijan, the great transcendental wise detective, expert in the overviews, pieces together all this information. So this is also connected, because what you're going to get here is right after you got rasa, because this intense affection, even between Krishna and the queens of Dwarka and the residents of Hastinapur, a very high section is given. But it's still the beginning of the Bhagavatam. So that high sense of devotion has to be supported by some gyan and vairagya. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, the middle six chapters are bhakti yoga. And the last six chapters are jnana yoga, renunciation. So philosophically, there's a very, very high dose of renunciation through the preaching of Vidura. That's needed and essential for us to progress further. The Bhagavatam is just purifying our consciousness and giving us the proper conceptions, rooting out the misconceptions, the anarthas, the obstacles as the consciousness progresses canto by canto till it can fully appreciate Krishna's pastimes. So what happens here is a little back as Vidura enters again, he comes back to the palace there. You can see their love for him. I described this yesterday a bit. That Vidura, when someone's really a saint, then you have to have some devotion and affection for him. That's the nature of a devotee. The qualities are he's all, when you practice devotional service, even at the platform of sadhana in a steady way, then one of the qualities is that one can help everyone by his presence and he can attract everyone. So they're so attracted to him, even Krishna was attracted to him. Because we'll read in the third canto that when Krishna was leaving the world, he asked about Vidura because Vidura went on pilgrimage all that time. So he was also in Krishna's heart. When you have attachment to someone, then you think of them all the time. So Krishna was thinking of Vidura. You can imagine what his devotees thought of Vidura. And what to speak of the Pandavas. Because he sheltered the Pandavas their whole life. It was described in the previous verses. He would criticize Dhritarashtra for how he treated the Pandavas. He would chastise Duryodhana for how he treated the Pandavas. And then he was in on the intrigues to save them. He was partial to them. So also he's specifically affectionate to them. And when someone's affectionate to you, who's your superior, that gives you love for them, because that's the relationship. Our love for a superior is that he is our shelter and protector, and that's how we develop love for a superior person. That's the mood of love for a superior person. He is my shelter, he is my protector. So they had tremendous affection for Vidura. And then we saw the Vedic reception. you were at that class and we described how they received him. Then the first thing they did is they asked about Krishna. And then they treated him like a, it said like a godly, devavat, just like a god. But he wasn't there to get that facility. He wasn't there to get that reception. And I described that also. You don't care for any palace when you're wandering in the forest of Braj. Vidura had just come from Vrindavan. You don't care for any forest. You heard that tape by that kirtanir this morning? Sanatan Das, you heard that kirtan? He lives in like one room without a fan during summer and the winter. You think he cares to live in the MVT, the Mayapur Vrindavan Trust, with the hot water and the heat and the marble? Mm-hmm. You're convinced? No. But if a sadhu is found in a place like that, it's for preaching. So he just came back to help Vidura, to help Dhritarashtra. And then the verse before the one, before Sutta Goswami is going to explain the scene of the preaching, which is this verse, he describes that finally Maharaj Yudhisthira was established in the kingdom. He observed the birth of one grandson who can continue the noble tradition. He reigned peacefully, enjoyed uncommon opulence in cooperation with his younger brothers. They were expert administrators. So we finally get the sense that Yudhisthira is finally, that the person who was so distressed at the end of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was just so distressed, suffered so much. No one could pacify him, even by philosophy. And finally in his life, you know, that's even after he was exiled. His whole life was just so much suffering and difficulties. And now finally, he's reigning peacefully. And then Vidura comes and preaches, and his uncle leaves, and it's... I think Purijan quoted that Prabhupada explained that the miseries of the material world is like being pinched. Krishna is pinching. So we can't get absorbed in this material world. We can't get absorbed in the illusion. Because to get absorbed in the illusion is even greater suffering. Because if you get attached to the material world, then it's more suffering. Because that platform, as Dhritarashtra is going to destroy, is temporary. That platform's going to be taken away. So we shouldn't become attached to that platform. We shouldn't get too absorbed in that platform. Household life means grihastha. Grihastha means he's situated in the house. It's a platform he needs to transcend and become Krishna conscious. But it's grihastha. He's situated in the house but attached to Krishna. And he does his duties in the grihastha ashram, and his senses are satisfied in the grihastha ashram to situate him for the higher endeavor of Krishna consciousness. So if one starts to become too attached, then Krishna gives a little pinch. He just never lets us organize the material world in the illusion that, you know, this is eternal and it's not going to change. Like in the spiritual world, when you have a situation, then it's permanent, it's eternal. You've made it. You've reached it. It doesn't end. Krishna's not going to come and then, in a way, he'll change things, but not really. For rasa, for invoking affection. But it's not that you're in the spiritual world and you have your house, and then, you know, someone comes and the mortgage is there, and then someone shows up with the health insurance, and then your best friend gets sick and he's going to die. You know, it's not like that. So Krishna is inspiring us for that world, not this temporary world. And because Dhritarashtra was in that illusion, he was so in that illusion that this is the permanent place. That this is the place where I'm going to live happily ever after. He was in such an illusion, despite his life, which Dhritarashtra is going to explain, that he was in so much an illusion that this is my kingdom, my eternal kingdom. You can see when someone gets into family life, they get in the illusion that this is it. This is the reality. This doesn't change. I am this. This is my mother. This is my father. These are my children eternally. And this is my wife eternally, and it doesn't end. That's the illusion of the material world. One time, Hridayananda Maharaj, he showed me a letter. His mother wrote him a letter, said, come home. Please come home. You want to be a priest? It's okay. You come home and be a rabbi. I don't mind. So he showed me his response. He said, our eternal relationship is with Krishna and others are temporary. That's the real thing. And then time is showing us that. Yes, we've set it up. Get out. We've set it up. Change. We have contact now to too much news, internet, we could read, you know, see, and it's just like, phew, floods. I just saw there's a flood in Uttar Pradesh. The water's coming over people's houses. And then they're helicoptering in tarpaulins or something to cover people. And I was reading on the news, so it had this whole image, you know, of all these, you know, people in Uttar Pradesh on houses, and they, like, then the water went over the top of the houses and they were on hills. Right? And there's Braja Bihari in the Gurukul on top of the building, you know, with the flood coming, just when they got everything together. I said, because I looked at it, because it said Northern India flood. And it was Uttar Pradesh, the poorest state in India. So now we'll go into these instructions by Dhritarashtra. Insurmountable, eternal time imperceptibly overcomes those who are too much attached to family affairs and always engrossed in their thoughts. Now I have to get back in the frame. So this is Vidura. It's going to show you what a sadhu is. A sadhu is compassionate because he sees the mentality. I also described this yesterday. That by your, you know, someone is a little intelligent and knows Shastra. Anyway, he can see by a person's actions what thoughts lead to those actions. And with him, he could see he's pramatam. He's insanely attached. And Tat-i-haya, and he's engrossed in such thoughts. He's engrossed in such thoughts. That this is my kingdom, this is the world. Bhagavad Gita says, nasate vidyate bhavo, nabhavo vidyate sataha. That which is temporary is not real. And that which has no end is real. It's not real. Because it's temporary, it's changing at every moment, like a wave in the ocean. This is very, now he's going to preach, and it's so powerfully, and he sees the mentality. And he's compassionate. I described yesterday that Prabhupada was going on the beach, and he saw these old people playing shuffleboard, you know, in Bermuda shorts. You know, I have that image, because they used to, when I used to go to a yacht and pool club when I was young, they used to play shuffleboard, these old people. And it's exactly like this. They do not see Kala, Parama, Dustara, the insurmountable eternal time. They do not see it. And it's moving, and it's changing their material platform. It's not permanent. But there they are. We're going to live forever. And they don't understand the spiritual platform. They don't, it's Kala, it's described before. It's a very important point. Kala means Krishna's moving matter in time for our enlightenment. And the duty of human life is to respond to the different situations Krishna gives us spiritually and according to Shastra so that we can become enlightened and spiritually advanced. And therefore, with every movement of time, we're supposed to use that opportunity for enlightenment. And if someone uses his life that way, he becomes self-realized. In other words, our life as it's organized and as the material nature is moving, is that's the path, that's the perfect transformation of matter that's to bring us to the point of self-realization. Whatever happens, it's the perfect transformation of matter to bring us to enlightenment. So we say, why does this happen to us? It's perfect. And if we respond to that, it will root out all our misconceptions and anarthas and give us the necessary experiences and knowledge to become self-realized. And to not use it when it moves and then just to, you know, here it is, Krishna's giving us, you know, a bad liver. You know, and what do? We turn on the television. You know, Krishna's, you know, then especially when you're old, Krishna accelerates the message that this material platform is doomed. I gave you enough time to, you know, situate yourself. It's doomed. And then you see, and I gave the example, you know, like you visited your parents and I visited my parents. They just don't see. And we wish that we could be powerful like Vidura to shake them and say, wake up, your mother, your father. He does not see. He does not see. He still wants to be the king. And he's not seeing. So Prabhupada in the purports, I may speak mostly on this verse because the same points come up. Prabhupada in the purports say we need many such viduras today, sadhus, that are expert. Wake up. Don't you see? Use your life. It's moving, and you're thinking it's permanent, your life, and time is moving, and you're thinking this is reality. And at the same time as it's moving, you're so engrossed in it that you don't see that the purpose of human life is self-realization, that you're meant to solve this problem. You're meant to solve death, disease, old age. You're meant to solve it. And how you're meant to solve it? By getting free from the illusion that identifies you with the material platform, makes you think that this is the real. Reality is that you don't die. When you wake up, you don't die. You don't get sick. You don't have disease. That's the reality. So he saw this mentality, insane attachment, and he's going to enlighten him. And then, of course, it's not for Yudhisthira. He's already awakened to the real the spiritual platform. He's not engrossed in the kingdom. He's completely detached from the kingdom. It's only out of duty. And previous verses, he was already described in relationship to the birth of Maharaj Yudhisthira. When Sutta Goswami began to describe the birth of Maharaj Yudhisthira, a significant point about his birth was the dynasty, especially Yudhisthira, who was taking care of him. And he described him. He had no attachment to any godly opulence. As a man who is hungry only wants food and doesn't care about other petty desires, one who has that desire for spiritual life, the material happiness, he doesn't get engrossed in it. So we'll read more about, now we'll read his preaching.
Vidurastarabhipretya dhritarastram abhashita rajan nirgamyatam sigram pashyedam vayamagatam.
Mahatma Vidura knew all this, and therefore he addressed Dhritarashtra saying, my dear king, please get out of here immediately. Do not delay. just see how fear has overtaken you. So get out immediately. Because everything that you've surrounded you with is fortifying the illusion you're in, that you're the body. That's what we do. When we stay in a place long enough, we organize it for sense gratification. And the whole atmosphere of that place nourishes the illusion that I am the enjoying controller. So when you're in a family life for so many years without practicing Krishna consciousness, without using things in Krishna's service, when you're in that for so many years, you are convinced that this is reality, that this is, you're dependent on this, you know, it's just. So therefore, when someone is so attached to that situation, it's best for him to immediately leave it and just forget it and not tell the people where you are. That's what he's going to tell him. This is my diagnosis for you. Get out immediately. Fear. And the thing is, the instructions he gave is applicable for everyone. Even Yudhisthira was younger, it's applicable, him to Prabhupada said, and everyone was listening to it in the whole kingdom, this incredible speech, dialogue, but especially for Dhritarashtra. And therefore he says, Rajan, O king. This is the essence of his particular illusion. I got a little bit wrong when I was speaking yesterday. Dhritarashtra is the older brother. Pandu is next, then Vidura. So that instilled in him even a greater frustration. I was the oldest. I could have been the king, but I was blind. And now Pandu became the king. Now he died. Why should his sons take the throne? My sons, I'm senior. And therefore he had this insane attachment to be the king. But he said, oh, Rajan. King means you can order. That's what the king means. When you're the king, you can order. The Prabhupada says that you can order, but you're the servant of time. You're the servant of Kala. You cannot order. So Prabhupada says, he says, Vidura as a saint and as the duty-bound, affectionate youngest brother of Dhritarashtra wanted to waken Dhritarashtra from his slumber of disease and old age. Vidura therefore sarcastically addressed Dhritarashtra as the king, which he was actually not. Everyone is the servant of eternal time, and therefore no one can be king in the material world. King means the person who can order. The celebrated king wanted to order time and tide, but time and tide refused to obey his order. Therefore one is a false king in the material world. It's an illusion that you're the king. And that palace is an illusion, and your throne is an illusion. So get out of the illusion, and therefore leave the illusion that you've created. Not that there's no throne, but that you should be sitting on it and you're the king. Not that you don't have a family, but this is your eternal position. Out.
Pratikriya nayasyeha kutas chit kari chit prabho sa esha bhagavan kala sarvesham na samagata.
This frightful situation cannot be remedied by any person in this material world. My Lord, it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead as eternal time, kala, that has approached us all. So before Dhritarashtra could ask, Vidura told him. There's no remedial measure. We described that yesterday, that when you explain philosophy to someone, that entails giving up his attachments, which may entail giving him a worldview or position which is not the one that he's attached to. What to speak of criticizing someone and saying you're wrong. Then the rationalization process goes in. You know, your mind starts, and there's no one to argue with you, because all your false logic, there's no one to debate with you. So all your false logic goes in that I'm not actually wrong. And in this regard, I'll tell you one story about one senior Vaishnava. He was in charge of the construction. He was in charge of the construction in Vrindavan. So Prabhupada came out. And Prabhupada said, look at this. They cheated you. There's no pattern here. Because, you know, you put the tiles. He said, no, Prabhupada, if you see, there's a pattern. He said, there's no pattern here. Prabhupada said, there's no pattern here. He said, no, Prabhupada, if you move this line and you see, it's a very intricate pattern. Prabhupada said, there's no pattern here. He said, no, if you look like this. Prabhupada said, yes, it's a pattern. It's a fool's pattern. And you're a fool. So, before those processes can go into mind, you know, no, it's okay, you know, we can save it, you know, there must be something. No, there's no remedial vision. He's really going for it as a preacher now. He's really going for it. He realizes there's no other choice to be. It's very, very strong in cutting. Sadhu means to cut. He cuts the false ego, not the heart. Very carefully. But he has to do this very delicate operation. The patient may die. He may scream. He may run away. He may become he has no choice because he's dying. So even in the days of so-called scientific advancement of knowledge, there's no remedial measure either for old age or for death. Old age is the notice of the arrival of death served by cruel time. And no one can refuse to accept either summon calls or the supreme judgment of eternal time. This is explained before Dhritarashtra because he might ask Vidura to find out some remedial measure for the imminent fearful situation as he had ordered many times before. As the king, you know, fix this, stop this. Before ordering, however, Vidura informed that there's no remedial measure. And of course, Prabhupada discusses Aranyakashipu, the story, you know, another example. He tried to counteract. You can't counteract. Yena chaiva bipano yam pranai priyatamai api janasadyo viyujeta kim utanyar danadivi. Whoever is under the influence of supreme time, kala, eternal time, must surrender his most dear life and what to speak of other things such as wealth, honor, children, land, and home. So this is it. Wake up, you'll lose everything. So it's for old or young, we have to understand. We have to put things in perspective. We have to put things in perspective that this material world is temporary and the spiritual life is eternal, that we're the soul, not the body. And that our life should not be spent just absorbed in the material situation which is doomed. But we should awaken our eternal life. Better the material platform. Prabhupada gives the example of a scientist who is plan making. And eternal time called him, attending a very important commission. He had to give up everything. He was making plans, but he had to give up everything. Now, the proof that the material platform is doomed, your father, Pitri, Bratri, Saritputra, Ataste, Vigatam, Vayam, Atmacha, Jaraya, Grasta, Parageham, Upasase. Your father, brother, well-wishers, and sons are all dead and passed away. You yourself have expended a major portion of your life. Your body is now overtaken by invalidity, and you are living in the home of another. Look at you're so attached to this situation, it's even degrading for you. It's temporary, the signs are coming. And look at the history. There's a famous verse in the Bhagavatam. I think it's in the second canto. There's some verses where I think Sukadeva Goswami describes the sannyasi, the mendicant. That is, deha patya kalitadishu atma sanyesh vasatsvapi pushan nidhanam Pushanapi napashyati. Pushanapi, we have experience napashyati, but we don't see. Everyone is dying, and we're thinking that we're protected in our family, and they're going to protect us. Somehow they're going to protect us. But the situation, yo.
I don't know the verse. Are you saying about the infallible soul?
Yes.
Yes. Of relatives and friends.
Right. The infallible soldiers. And the example I had that comes to my mind in this, which I can't help repeat, is that in 1985, when they had the famous New Vrindavan reform meetings, and I got a phone call that I should fly to America, you know, for these meetings to overthrow the Zonal Acharyas. And I flew in, and I flew into New York. I went to the meetings, and on my way back, this was the only time in 20 years that I was in America in the month of October or September. In 20 years, it was the first time. And as soon as, on the way back, I just called up my mother, because they live near John F. K. Airport. I said, I'm going to stop in for a day or two. And then my mother said, did you hear? Grandfather's died. Can you come to the funeral? And at that time, you know, we had such a fanatic mood, James. You remember when I told you to wear? Go to your brother's graduation? You went to your brother's graduation, right? Yeah. And I told you you should go to your brother's graduation. My parents asked me, can you go to the funeral? And I said, I can go, but this is the way I dress. And I didn't even have nice clothes. If I had silks or something, but this is the way I dress, you know. We were just like so... Yeah. It was off? Oh. We were just so rigid. So I remember in the funeral, I can just, little story. I usually don't go so much off, but there's a few people here, so a little entertainment. Well, so it was... my mother's brothers were millionaires. Multi-millionaires. So the funeral was in a very posh funeral parlor in Long Island. And the system is everyone else goes in first, and then the family comes in. I really regret this now. So all my brothers, and I have two brothers, and I have, everyone is males in the family. One lady. So they're all with their, you know, beautiful Jewish wives, you know, all dressed up. And they all walk in, and here I walk in this, like, you know, real brahmachari, wrinkled, cheap cloth like I'm wearing now. I wasn't dressed any better than I was dressed now. You know, walking in, front row. But what happened, which is interesting, when my uncle gave the speech, he described my grandfather, who was a Stoic, and it's relevant to hear. My uncle gave a speech about my grandfather, and he described how my grandfather, he was so stoic. He was 93, and he had cancer. He walked out of the hospital 5 times, got in his car, and drove away. You know, and then finally, when he was so stoic, and he never in his life ever went to anybody else's funeral. He just, you know, wouldn't recognize death. And his last words, which my uncle said, is that my last words to my grandfather was, I thought I was strong. The strongest of the strong. I thought I was wise, the wisest of the wise, but it isn't true. Of course, my uncle said, but it is true, he lives on. But it was, it was, so everyone, your father, brother, well-wishers, and sons are all dead. It's 100 sons. you yourself. See, he's really Anda Paraiva Vadiro Manda Pragyascha Sampratam Vishirna Danta Mandagni Saraga Kapam Udvaham. You have become blind from your very birth, and recently you have become hard of hearing. Your memory is shortened, and your intelligence is disturbed. Your teeth are loose, your liver is defective, and you are coughing up mucus. So now he's getting personal. He's not just telling philosophy. Look at you. Symptoms of old age. It's Prabhupada gives the word apakshaya, dwindling. Born, the body's born. It grows. It reproduces. It's maintained. Then it dwindles. Then it dies. See, Prabhupada wrote, they forget their permanent identity and become foolishly active for impermanent occupations, forgetting altogether their prime. Our prime duty is to realize our eternal relationship with Krishna. Not to situate ourselves in the material world. Saints and sages like Vidura approach such foolish men to awaken them to the real situation. But they take such sadhus and saints as parasites of society, and almost all of them refuse to hear the words of such sadhus and saints, although they welcome show-bottled sadhus and so-called saints who can satisfy their senses. So this is a real sadhu. He's not just to pat you and say, you're okay, everything is nice. This is so nice to hear. Vidura is not a sadhu to satisfy the ill-gotten sentiments of Dhritarashtra. He was correctly pointing out the real situation. Sadhus point out the real situation. Reminds me of the story that Prabhupada told, not Prabhupada told, but it was at Dallas. Right near the Dallas Temple, there's a place called White Rock Lake, where all the rich people in Dallas live. It's all mansions. And in the middle of the lake, there's an island, and in the island lives H.L. Hunt, one of the world's richest men. His sons tried to buy all the silver in the world. It's like to jack up the prices, or in America, very. So the devotees were there, and they pointed out the house to Prabhupada. This is H.L. Hunt's house. Oh, Prabhupada said. He said, and we went to see him, but we couldn't get in. Prabhupada said, what would you have said to him? And they said, well, we tell him about the Gurukula, because it was Dallas was the first Gurukula. Prabhupada said, no, because he was an oil man. You should tell him that. You know, the oil belongs to the earth. You have exploited and stolen the oil, and therefore you're a thief and you'll be punished. And he said, but Prabhupada, he'll get very, very angry. Prabhupada said, if a dog barks, you show him the stick. Then Prabhupada said, but you couldn't get in, but will death get a gate pass? Will death have to go through the chokidar? So he, wow. Then he goes on. Aho means alas. Now he really gets excited. Alas. Aho mahiyasi jantur jivatasa yatabhavan bhima pavarjitam pindam adate grihapalavat. Alas, how powerful are the hopes of a living being to continue his life. Verily, you are living like a household dog and are eating the remnants of food given by Bhima. See the material situation. You've degraded yourself. You're so attached to this situation. You're so attached to a situation where you're like a household dog. You're a king and you've taken the situation a household dog so you can sit on the throne. And take the mercy and shelter of Bhima. Bhima, your 100 sons, he killed them all personally. And simply because you want to sit, look at the degraded situations we accept in the material world. And Borijan was telling a story from Mahabharata at the end of the war, they, you know, they all embraced Dhritarashtra. The war was over. Still, he was their uncle and acted like their father. So they told Bhima, don't go, because he was blind. Dhritarashtra was blind. So they sent an iron statue, and Dhritarashtra, he was so powerful, when it exploded, he wanted to kill Bhima. Now he's taking shelter. You want to live comfortably at the risk of humiliation. So again, Prabhupada said, a sadhu like Bhadura is meant to awaken such blind persons and thus help them go back to Godhead. Borijan also gave another example too, how heavy Bhadura is. He said it's like in the cowboy movies where, you know, some guys are acting all crazy and then his friend grabs him and goes smack, 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 smack. And the guy like shakes his head around and says, I needed that. You know, and he's like back into sanity. So the sadhu. So we'll go on.
Adnir nishrishto dattascha garodarascha dushchita vritam kshetram dananyesham tadatta ashubhikya.
There is no need to live a degraded life and subsist on charity of those whom you tried to kill by arson and poisoning. You also insulted one of their wives and usurped their kingdom. What a degrading position. The people you tried to kill and then they give you shelter and you live at their house. So degraded. So Prabhupada said that sannyasa is meant to save one from this degrading position. It's a degrading position to be old. And one example I thought is I went to these, maybe you went with me, Billy Joe, when we went to Jaipur, did you go to Jaipur with me? And there was a man named Durga Singh. He had a big mustache. He used to be the king. And in the middle of the city, you know, like horrible place, like trucks, you go through like a gate and there's like a 5-acre estate. He used to own the whole thing. And he lives there and like, he's not very rich. He's just a travel agent now, but he has the ancestral home and it's quite, you know, like it's really nice, like a little. And his mother is there, his grandmother, a great grandmother is there, and she's like 95 and they want to send her to Vrindavan. They want to send her, but she can't. And she's worried about the daughter, will she get married, and what the son's doing, and what her great-grandson is doing. And I saw this lady, she was so pious. But it was such a degrading position. That's not the time of life to have to deal with all the problems, the material problems. It's not, that thing is going to be finished soon. It's the time of your life, it's your duty to cultivate self-realization and start focusing on that aspect, and therefore to leave. So we need sadhus, Prabhupada said, because in the present day, there are Dhritarashtras in every home. 5,000 years ago, there was one Dhritarashtra. But at the present moment, there are Dhritarashtras in every home. Prabhupada talks about politicians like Marshal Tito of Yugoslavia, like 90 years old, still ruling the kingdom. Get out.
Sasyapi tava deho yam kripana jiji visho parat yanichito jirno jarayo vasasiva.
Despite your unwillingness to die and your desire to leave, even at the cost of your honor and prestige, despite this, your miserly body will certainly dwindle and deteriorate like an old garment. Kripana, he called him a miser. And Prabhupada in the purport, his point was, what is a miser? A miser is one who has wealth and doesn't use it. So if you have the human form of life and you don't use it for self-realization, you're a miser. And what's a Brahmin? Brahmin means broad-minded. Broad-minded means like this, you just don't see. Like a child's not broad-minded. He has dysentery, and there's the feast. And all the things that are going to make it worse. He can only see from 1 o'clock when he begins the feast to 1:30 when he ends it. Not, you know, at 2 o'clock when he's in the bathroom or the next day when he's in the hospital. So we're like that. Our life is like a feast. And the rest of, you know, we don't look broad minded. So he's a creep. So Prabhupada said, better to die Better to die, better to go to the north and die and use your body properly than to live in a degraded, miserly condition. So now he's going to continue the instructions.
Katta swartam imam deham virakto mukta bandana avigyata gatir jayat savai dira udarita.
He is called undisturbed who goes to an unknown, remote place and freed from all obligation, quits his body when it has become useless. It's so nice when you read the Bhagavatam, you always see newer and newer things. So I saw today, I was looking at the word for word, gata swartam imam deham. So gata swartam means when, swartam means when your own wealth, your own value, gut is not used properly. In other words, when you're a miser. So when your body becomes useless, even for sense gratification, when it becomes useless, or you're in a situation where you're surrounded by the family and you cannot engage in self-realization and you're getting old, your body is useless, but also it's useless because you're not able to engage in self-realization. If you're in such a situation as that, then get out immediately. Don't even think about it. Just get out and go to a place, a remote place, unknown, where no one knows you, where they won't bother you. Just get out and forget about it. Because you're such a miser. You're in that family, you're not using a human form of life for self-realization, and that situation is such that they're constantly going to engage you in material activities, and now here's the next wedding, and here's the thing, and this is the problem, and this is the situation, and you're still engaged in your business, and you're, you know, you, and your body's deteriorating, and it's useless, and also you're not using it properly. Get out, be dira, be sober, just fix your mind, don't be disturbed, do it. He's very, very powerful in this instruction. Leave home at once. And this is a dira. Dira means one who is so sober he can give up this attachment. Be sober, be sober.
Yasvakat parato veha jata nirveda atmavan Riddhi Ritva Harim Gehat Pravrajet Sanarotama.
He is certainly a first-class man who awakens and understands, either by himself or from others, the falsity and misery of this material world, and thus leaves home and depends fully on the personality of Godhead residing within this heart. So Prabhupada here, he said, now he tells him, a first-class man, he's not a first-class man, is Naratam. Naratam just doesn't leave out of frustration. Prabhupada explains this. But he leaves out of realization that he should depend on Krishna. Not that the situation is frustrating. Prabhupada said the idea is that the renounced order of life, after a frustrated life of sentiment in the material world, may be the stepping stone on the path of self-realization. But real perfection of the path of liberation is attained when one is practiced to depend fully on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada said there's Naratam, there's Dira, Sannyas, and Naratam. This Naratam means dependent on Krishna. And the point here is this is Prabhupada. Naratam is even higher. Not only leave home, not depending on anyone, but leaves home and depends on Krishna. The best of men is completely dependent on Krishna. Really, sannyas is meant for this. I described this, if you saw, I wrote that article about Kunti. That the basic idea is that Krishna is our master. Our relationship now with him is servant. And our love is just like the child. When the child is dependent on the mother, and the mother cares and protects him, reciprocating his dependence, then the child naturally develops love for the mother. When you have a mother like that, you never forget. In Indian families, they never forget the mother. You know, it's like a balanced family. The mother's there. She cares for the child. I'm actually quite impressed now after the history of ISKCON how some of these devotees that are now having children are taking care of their children. I see, I saw Kaylee Lalita the other week. They're really focused, you know, they're really on caring for the child and educating him. And I've Prem Bhakti Marg. So you can see those, they're going to develop such love. They'll never forget their mother. And the love is being developed. Am I protector? You know, am I maintainer? So what happens is you can't do that with Krishna when you're in the household very easily. Because you develop a sense, an illusion that there's, the tendency is there. You don't have to. That I'm protected. I don't need to depend on Krishna. I got my money, my wife, my children, my house. So sannyas means, real sannyas, means that you leave all that and you go to the forest where you have no shelter and protection, so-called, but then you see that it's actually Krishna's that, when it's beyond your control, you'll see that it's actually Krishna that's giving you shelter. So Vaishnav sannyas is meant to develop devotion and love for Krishna. So he said, this is a first-class man. And Prabhupada said, at home, one should practice devotional service at home, hearing and chanting the holy name, quality, form, pastimes, entourage, and association of pure devotees. And this practice will help one awaken God consciousness in proportion to one's sincerity. So at home, we have to develop it in this way, by being surrendered. Which, remember, as I'm thinking, you know, your legal marriage is like a week from something. What am I going to say? But this just reminded me that this is exactly the instruction that's given in the seventh canto for householders. There's instructions in the seventh canto. Well, maybe I'll look at them. But it's specifically, it's the real duty of the household is to chant and hear in association with devotees. And this is, so Prabhupada naturally brings out the essence here. More.
Ato di cham disham yatu swaya gyata gatir bhavan ito vak prayusha kala pumsa guna vikarshana.
Please, therefore, leave for the north immediately without letting your relatives know, for soon that time will approach, will diminish the good qualities of men. So he's saying Kali Yuga is coming soon. And the atmosphere is going to be so difficult, and the influence. And also, the sadhu creates the influence. The sadhu creates the influence for renunciation. So if Vidura goes, because he's not going to stay there, then again, even without Kali Yuga, Dhritarashtra, well, yeah, okay, you know, renunciation, but ain't so bad, and I have to take care of my kids and the kingdom, and, you know, just a little bit more, and, you know, I'll live, you know, it's only a few gray hairs, okay, the hearing is going, but they got new medical, you know. So he says, leave immediately for the north. Immediately leave for the north, without letting your relatives know, for soon that time will approach. Because the sadhu creates the favorable environment. When he leaves, the influence is gone. Just like there's a term called smasana vairagya. There's a renunciation at the funeral place. And then after you leave, after a while, you forget it. And we have to be careful too, because the sadhu can create renunciation, but it's like a fever. You know, you can give a real fiery speech. We don't want the renunciation just to be like a fever. We want it based on transcendental knowledge, not just pep talk. But, you know, it should be by chanting and hearing, naturally it will grow. So leave immediately. He was advised to leave him before Kali Yuga approached because the atmosphere which was created by Vidura, his valuable instructions on the facts of life would fade away due to the influence of the age was approaching. Actually, there are two more verses. So.
Evam Raja Vidarena Nujena Pragyat Chakshur Bodhita Ajameda Chitva Sveshu Sneha Prashan Dradimno Nischakrama Bratri Siddharshita Bha.
Thus Maharaj Dhritarashtra, the scion of the family of Ajameda, firmly convinced by introspective knowledge, Pragya, broke at once the strong network of familial affection by his resolute determination. Thus he immediately left home to set out on the path of liberation as directed by his younger brother. So Prabhupada, in the purport, he brings out this is sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sadhu shastrahoy, sarva shastrahoy, sadhu sangha. That sadhu, Prabhupada says, we become advanced by the influences of the speeches of saintly persons, which enter deep into the heart. So the sadhu, that's what we need. We need sadhus. So we need to constantly hear to get the proper conceptions. So Prabhupada said, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the great preacher, the principal, has stressed the importance of association with sadhus, pure devotees of the Lord, even a moment's association. And Prabhupada says, we're not ashamed to admit the fact that this fact was experienced in our practical life. Were we not favored by his divine grace, Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, by our first meeting, by a few moments only, would not have been possible for us to accept this mighty task of describing Srimad Bhagavatam in English. Without seeing him at that opportune moment, we might have become a very great business magnate, but we would never have been able to walk the path of liberation. And another practical example is Dhritarashtra. The scriptures enjoin, therefore, one should associate with sadhus only, rejecting all other kinds of association. So this is the sadhu. And this is the last verse for today.
Patim payantam subalasya putri pati vrata chanu jagama sadvi amalayam nyasta danda praharsham manasvinam iva satsam prahara.
The gentle and chaste Gandhari, who is the daughter of the King Subal of Gandhara, followed her husband, seeing that he was going to the Himalayan mountains, which are the delight for those who accepted the staff of the renounced order, like fighters who have accepted a good lashing from the enemy. So this is an incredible analogy. An ascetic enjoys austerities, just as a kshatriya enjoys a lashing from the enemy. In both cases, the difficulties give one strength, right? When there's a fighter, you know, and he's like there's someone else fighting with him, he enjoys it if there's a good lashing. It gives him strength. Sridhar Swami comments in this regard, and this is such an essential point. Anything that gives one pain can give one happiness if his mentality is proper. This is useful to meditate. We should learn this art. Anything which gives us pain can give us happiness if the mentality is proper. So look at Gandhari. You know, it was so difficult. She was a queen and she was just going to go to the Himalayas. People had such character in those days. Principles, what is right. And accepted that difficulty with happiness. I had one experience of that where I went preaching up to Haridwar. And I felt so satisfied. And actually, I met the principal of the Indian Military Academy, and he became a devotee. This is the West Point of India. This was the principal. He actually became a devotee. And I went there, and I met him, and I preached to him. Remember that when I got to the gate, you know, they sent me a military jeep and escort, and I sat. It was in, like, the Himalayas, and we sat on his patio in a big circle. And he came in, he was about 6'4", an Indian man, Brahmin, Sharma. He put on this great charter and he was going to preach to me. But he had some samskar and I was just speaking to him. And then I started telling him about Prabhupada and he just he just wanted to become a devotee. So when I was coming back, I felt so satisfied representing Prabhupada. I got in the Indian bus and I was in the back seat. Now, when you see an Indian bus, James, you'll appreciate the austerity. And it's all dusty and dirty. And I had like my danda, and I had like a little spot in the seat, right? It was like a 10-hour bus ride. And sitting next to me on one side was an old Indian man with tuberculosis, coughing. And on the other side was a village lady with like her young naked child. You know, I was just like squeezed in there, and it was like the bus was bumping and it was like hot. But I was feeling, my God, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? And then I thought, yes, this is great. Krishna's put me in a situation where it's like only for Prabhupada. And I felt great happiness. So this is, you know, they enjoy. And one other point, there's a difference between I should also mention that, I didn't mention it, but this Prabhupada mentions that dira means mayavadi sannyas. You leave out of frustration. To depend on Krishna is Vaishnav sannyas. Yeah. Text 31.
Ajata shatru krita maitro hutagnir vipram natva tila kobhumi rukmai Grihan pravishto guru vandanaya na cha pashat pitarao shobalim cha.
Mara Judhisthira, whose enemy was never born, performed his daily morning duties by praying, offering fire sacrifice to the sun god, and offering obeisances, grains, cows, land, and gold to the Brahmins. He then entered the palace to pay respects to the elderly. However, he could not find his uncles or aunt, the king of Subal, the daughter of the king of Subal. So Prabhupada said that philosophy without religion is speculation. Religion without philosophy is fanaticism. So here, the point that Prabhupada is going to bring out in the purport is that book knowledge is not enough. You have to practice. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, he was not only Dharmaraj, he was not only learned, but he was practicing and performing all the duties. So he offered fire sacrifice, he did yajna, prayers, obeisances, he gave charity to the Brahmins, and then he entered the palace to pay respect to the elderly. So this was the Vedic system. It's so nourishing. It's so pleasant. You know, people had duties. They were in a community. You can see how all these things are necessary to keep people pure and engaged.
Tata sanjayam asinam papachod vignamanasa kavalgane kvanastato Ridho hinas chanetayo.
Maharaj Yudhisthira, full of anxiety, turned to Sanjay, who was sitting there, and said, O Sanjay, where is our uncle who is old and blind? So he didn't see him, and he became so much filled with anxiety, and he turned to Sanjay.
Amba chahata putrata Pitrivya kwa gata surit api mayakrita pragye hata bandhu sabaryaya asham samana shamalam gangayam dukitopate.
Where is my well-wisher, Uncle Vidura, and Mother Gandhari, who is very afflicted due to all her son's demise? My uncle Dhritarashtra was also very mortified due to the death of all his sons and grandsons. Undoubtedly, I am very ungrateful. And did he therefore take my offenses very seriously and along with his wife drown himself in the Ganges? So Prabhupada said the Pandavas, especially Yudhisthira, anticipated the after effects of the battle. So they know that people would be distressed, you know, It's also predicted before Yudhisthira, thinking about all the suffering he caused. Besides all the people that were killed, he was thinking of the fact that when all the men are killed, then it creates enmity for generations. You know, you're Irish, you know, your son was killed by some Protestant, your husband was killed by some, or vice versa. So it's not only causes suffering then, but the actions of war cause suffering for generations. So they anticipated this, and now maybe was thinking that, you know, Dhritarashtra and finally Gandhari became affected by it. And he started to feel bad. Yudhisthira is such a nice example of a Vaishnava. Prabhupada said, a devotee never finds fault with others, but tries to find his own and thus rectify them as far as possible. That's a Vaishnava. Not that we point, Prabhupada said, you point one finger at someone else, I don't know if Prabhupada said this, and three fingers are pointing at you. As a pious man, Maharaj Yudhisthira took into account all his unavoidable misdeeds, and he never thought of the misdeeds of his uncle and company. There's also a story with I'm not sure who it was, but it's in the Mahabharata that Yudhisthira and Duryodhana, there was some test and they each were asked to find, do you know the story?
Yeah.
What is it? Loudly.
They're asked to find the most sinful person or somebody lower than themselves. And you just, you couldn't find anybody.
Yeah, it was something you can find, you know, yeah, find a good man, and Dhritarashtra couldn't find one.
Mm-hmm.
And Yudhisthira,
he couldn't find anybody lower than himself.
Yeah, something like that. Yudhisthira is a very good example of a Vaishnava. He's a Vaishnava.
Pitāryu parate pando sarvam no suryadas sishun arakshatam vyasanata pitrivyau kwa katavita.
When my father Pandu fell down and we were all small children, these two uncles gave us protection from all kinds of calamities. They were always our good well-wishers. Alas, where have they gone now? So this is also, he's thinking of the one thing they did for him, which is they protected him. Even though all the other things he did, they never thought. I see that tendency today also. A devotee has problems. Devotee has faults. And what you see that fault as the whole person. And then he becomes demonized. Remember one devotee had some difficulty and I was trying to help him and I called one godbrother. And I asked the godbrother, can you help? He said, yes, certainly. I said, what about he did? He said, well, that's one part of him. But this, you know, but that's not the whole him. So Vaishnava is very liberal. I've seen that. When you're in India, the culture, when you really meet a Vaishnava, Vaishnava is liberal. Like Bhakti Trumarj is a good example of a Vaishnava. And he's liberal. He's open-hearted.
Suta uvacha kripaya sneha vakla vyat suta viraha karshita atmeshvaram chakshano na pratyahati pidita.
Suta Goswami said, because of compassion and mental agitation, Sanjay, not having seen his own master, Dhritarashtra, was aggrieved and could not properly reply to Maharaj Yudhisthira. See, he could not understand, you know, how he left. He thought he left out of frustration because he couldn't understand the effect Vidura had on the consciousness of Dhritarashtra. In the purport, Prabhupada said, Dhritarashtra, he left home in enthusiastic cheerfulness for a better life after departure from the dark well of home. And unless one is convinced of a better life after renunciation of the present life, one cannot stick to the renounced order simply by artificial dress or staying out of home. The main instruction that Srila Prabhupada gave to Satsarupa Maharaj when Satsarupa Maharaj took sannyas is that when you go to a rich man's home, you should never think, I could have had this. I could have had this family. I could have had this wife. I could have had... He said, you should be happy in your renunciation. And I think the Prabhupada said, like Jayadvaita Swami, our renunciation should be cheerful, not out of frustration. So he was very aggrieved because he worshipped Dhritarashtra. He's thinking how, and you know, out of frustration he left. He couldn't understand his mind.
Vimrijam shuni panibhyam vishtabhyatmanam atmana ajata shatrum pratyuche prabhopadavanusaram.
First he slowly pacified his mind by intelligence and wiping away his tears and thinking of the feet of his master Dhritarashtra. He began to reply to Maharaj Yudhisthira.
Sanjaya uvacha naham veda vivasitam pitruva kulanandana gandharyava mahabaho mushitosmi mahatmavi.
Sanjaya said, my dear descendant of the Kuru dynasty, I have no information of the determination of your two uncles and Gandhari. O king, I have been cheated by those great souls. So Prabhupada gives examples when the great souls cheat. That great souls cheat others may be astonishing to know, but it is a fact that great souls cheat others for a great cause. Before I go on with the cheating of the great souls, I'll give the comment that Bhurijan gave. Devotees don't cheat, they cultivate the mode of goodness. But if Krishna directly tells us to contradict or contravene the mode of goodness and do something beyond morality, then we do it. But the general acting place of the devotee is in the mode of goodness. Setting that, Prabhupada gives five examples in the purport of the cheating of great souls. It is said that Lord Krishna advised Yudhisthira to tell a lie before Duryodhana, and it was also for a great cause. The Lord wanted it, and therefore it was a great cause. Satisfaction of the Lord is the criterion of one who is bona fide, and the highest perfection of life is to satisfy the Lord by one's occupational duty. So again, very simple definition of what's right and wrong. Dharma means eternal nature. Or dharma means duty or righteousness or what you should do, correct action. It means eternal nature. Eternal nature depends on your constituent and function, what you're made of and what you're made for. We're eternal servants of Krishna. We're made for his service. We're part and parcel of Krishna. We're made for his service. Those actions that uncover that are good. Those actions which uncover that are bad or unethical. So the mode of goodness, cultivating that, generally is progressively uncovering our eternal nature as Krishna's servant. So we generally cultivate the mode of goodness. But it's not an absolute criteria of morality. The absolute criteria of morality is satisfying Krishna and uncovering our eternal nature. So Yudhisthira, I think he never touched the ground because he was so biased. But he had to lie in the battlefield of, you know, Kurukshetra. So he had to do something to shake up Dronacharya. So he had to tell him his son is dead. So he said, Ashwatthama has died. That was the one lie he told. But because he was such a saintly person, I think he said Ashwatthama. There was an elephant named Ashwatthama. So somehow or other it was the elephant, you know. He just didn't want to lie. Ashwatthama, the elephant. You know, something like that. And Dhritarashtra and Vidura, followed by Gandhari, did not disclose their determination to Sanjaya, although he was constantly with Dhritarashtra as his personal servant. Sanjaya never thought that Dhritarashtra can perform any act without consulting him. But Dhritarashtra going away from home was so confidential that it could not be disclosed even to Sanjaya. He felt cheated. And Sanatana Goswami also cheated the keeper of the prison house while going away to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's another story. He had to go to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he said, I just want to go in to the bathroom. So he took him down to the river and then he bribed him and then told him, just lie to people and tell them that I went in passing stool, I fell in the water and died. And Raghunath Das Goswami, he cheated his guru, Yadananda Acharya. Because his father didn't want him to go to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was very wealthy, his father, so he kept so many guards. So the guru said, his guru told him that, come with me, because the priest is not here to do the service. And he told his guru, he said, Yadanandana Acharya, which is his spiritual master, Diksha Guru, just go inside, you know, I'll take care of it. And when he went inside, he just left to go to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's also a great story. And then Prabhupada said, to satisfy the Lord, anything is good, for it is in relation with the Lord. We also had the same opportunity to cheat the family members and leave home to engage in the service of Srimad Bhagavatam. Such cheating was necessary for a great cause, and there is no loss for any party in such a transcendental thought. So, are there any questions on transcendental cheating? Should we go out now and rob a bank for Krishna?
Only if going inside, I don't have any order.
Okay, we'll check the kitchen, and then if there's no boga, we'll go out. Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.